This is Community Radio, and you're listening to Liberación, the nexus of local and global politics, art, and struggle. Liberación provides audiences with perspectives rarely heard on corporate-sponsored media stations. Our guests include educators, grassroots activists, artists, workers, and independent analysts who engage both local and global struggles, embracing a vision of freedom, solidarity, and social change.
Running deep as the ocean. Many are called, but so few were chosen. As I go through the motions of medication up in my doses, banging earth, winning fire, devotion. As I admire the focus, taking the city with a grain of salt, with it tasting foul, chase it down with the latest mark. Liquor rolling, hit it, now you did it. Hope you got some smarts, which you hope you got some heart. It ain't stopping when it start, nigga. Feel something bigger, got a hold on me. I ain't tripping out of Bobby Brown, lipping with my nose running. Basically, I had two options. I just chose one and then got ghost like my picture was on the most wanted. Coast to coast, from LA to Chicago. Now I'm faced with the weight of survival, plus the taste from the way I've been lied to. While I'm preaching, man, spitting this gospel like a win if I try to.
You're listening to WFT 90.1 FM Community Radio. Welcome to Liberación. I'm Antonia Tarder, and I'm here with Brian Dollner. We will be joined later by Carol and Aaron Amons from CU Citizens for Peace and Justice, and Martel Miller, longtime activist in this community. For this segment of Liberación, we will be examining the issue of police shootings of Black youth. More specifically, we'll look at the recent shooting death of Kewan Carrington at the hands of a Champaign police officer. We will also look at some of the ways this community is working together to learn the truth.
No matter what we face, we must face the moment of truth, baby.
There's a long history of police shooting of youth in Black communities and other communities of color. On February 1998, Chad Edwards, a Black youth, was shot in the head by Chicago police. Edwards and his girlfriend were visiting a neighbor's house with permission when the police entered unannounced. Edwards, unarmed, was shot when he went to the doorway to investigate the noise. The police ruled the shooting justifiable. While he was hospitalized in critical condition, police charged Edwards with criminal trespassing and aggravated assault. He later died from his wounds. In April of the same year in Riverside, California, police came upon Taisha Miller, a young Black woman who had dozed off in the front seat of her car. When she did not wake in response to their summons, the police smashed through the window of her car, then opened fire and killed Miller, claiming that they thought the startled girl was reaching for a weapon. In February 1999, 22-year-old Amadou Diallo, a West African immigrant, was shot to death by four New York City police officers who claimed he had a gun. It turned out to be a cell phone. On April 2001, Timothy Thomas, a 19-year-old Black youth who was unarmed, was fatally shot by a Cincinnati police officer. The officer was acquitted of all charges. In July 2003, three Shreveport police were involved in the shooting of Marquise Hudspeth after he pointed what police thought was a gun. It was also a cell phone. On October 2004, Minneapolis police shot and killed a 15-year-old boy when he turned toward officers who were chasing him. They said he had an object that appeared to be a gun. Investigations proved that the youth was unarmed. On February 6, 2005, 13-year-old Devin Brown was shot and killed by a Los Angeles police officer. The victim was behind the wheel of a Toyota Camry that police said had backed into a patrol car. On January 1, 2006, Bart police shot 22-year-old Oscar Grant, despite the fact that there were no less than 10 officers on the scene surrounding Grant and two companions who had been stopped. On November 26, 2006, Sean Bell was killed in a hail of bullets after leaving a party at a club in Queens, New York. On September 20, 2007, 20-year-old Gary King Jr. was shot in the back by an Oakland police officer after being pulled over for fitting the description of a person of interest, quote unquote. On July 4, 2009, Avery Cody Jr., a 16-year-old black youth, was shot by a Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputy. The deputy claimed that Cody had a loaded handgun. However, the video of the shooting and statements by witnesses showed that the youth did not brandish a weapon and posed no threat to deputies. Unfortunately, police shootings of black youth and other youth of color are generally explained away, and the police officers are exonerated. Although most of these shootings receive minimal coverage by the media, community groups have often organized to challenge police action. In almost every case, the police shootings were ruled justifiable, claiming the officers were acting in self-defense. What is clearly missing in these judgments is the absence of any historical understanding of the manner in which racism shapes the distorted perceptions of police officers. Their heightened and consistent aggressiveness in their handling of youth of color, and in particular black youth, speaks volumes to the manner in which racism taints their ability to perceive correctly what is going on, and their ability to remain calm and sensible in dealing with poor and working class youth of color. The wholesale criminalization and demonization of youth of color deems many police officers not only incompetent, but a real danger to the safety and well-being of poor and working-class youth of color in the United States.
Many questions into the police shooting of Kiwan Carrington, an unarmed 15-year-old African-American youth, still remain unanswered. The state police completed their investigation more than 2 weeks ago, but State's Attorney Julia Reitz to this date has not released her determination of whether or not to charge the two police in the shooting. There has been an outpouring of support for young Kiwan from friends and family who knew him. The community anxiously awaits for an explanation of what happened that rainy afternoon. On Friday, October 9, 2009, Champaign police responded to a reported burglary on 906 West Vine Street. The first to arrive on the scene was Champaign Police Chief R.T. Finney, who confronted the two 15-year-olds in their backyard. Classes in the READY program that Kiwan attended were canceled that day for teacher instruction. Kiwan, whose mother passed away from cancer last year, was staying at the house on Vine Street. He had eaten breakfast there that morning. When he arrived at the home in the afternoon, the house was locked and he could not get in. It was raining outside and the two youth were looking for shelter. When Champaign Police Chief R.T. Finney arrived at approximately 1:20 p.m., he knew only that a neighbor had reported a burglary. Soon after, a witness reportedly heard police calling out, "Get on the ground! Get on the ground!" It had been raining for 2 days, and the ground was wet and muddy. Police say that when one of the youth tried to get away, Finney grabbed him, and a struggle ensued. Another officer appeared on the scene, Daniel Norbitz, a 14-year veteran of the force. Although neither of the 15-year-old boys had a weapon, Norbitz apparently had his gun drawn and, according to a press statement released by Champaign Police, it was, quote, discharged, resulting in the fatal wounding of one of the subjects. An autopsy showed that the bullet went through Kiwan's left elbow and passed through his heart. Virtually no other information has been provided by the Champaign Police, saying that they did not want to impede the investigation being done by the state police. Yet Chief Finney was on the scene and saw everything that happened. Did Norbitz follow policy as practiced by the Champaign Police Department? Is it police policy to pull guns on youth? Or is this just the way that Champaign police treat black youth? The truth must come out.
Truth had me up against the ropes, semi-conscious without no boxing skills. Fear of it makes hair on my neck grow like minoxidil. Watching the clock is ill when faced with the truth parallels. Observing amateur videotapes of 21 top-notch NYPD cops get ill. Filet minds out to kill, still some never reveal true feelings. Me speaking on the truth right now in itself is a healing. See the creator, created existence and balance at right angles less than what's conceived and stated. So whoever shall stray away from right lives wrong. The derivative of the word false, opposite of truth, off course. Sure is my slave name, sin then. Troy Donald Jameson paves the path, enabling truth to stay stable and cling. Earth, sort of similar to the way static electricity stings. See, truth brings light. Light refracts off the mirror. Visions of yourself in error could never be clearer. The truth is that you're ugly. Not on the outside, but in the inside. On the outside, you front and you lovely. The discovery of these things and all are well hidden. But when you in denial of self, it is forbidden. That's the truth.
It's the truth, boy. In due time, see it everywhere. Gotta recognize. Let the truth be told from young souls that become old from days spent in the jungle. Where must one go to find it? Time is real, we can't rewind it. Out of everybody I met who told the truth, time did. We find kids speaking cause it's naturally in us. But the false prophet by telling us we born sinners, vendors of hate. Got me battling my own mind state at a divine rate. I ain't in this just to rhyme great. See the truth in the thighs of a stripper, the eyes of my nigga. If it's only one, then why should it differ? So constantly I seek it. Wonder why I gotta drink a six pack to speak it. Took a picture of the truth and tried to develop it. Had proof, it was only recognized by the intelligent. Took the negative and positive, cause niggas got to live. Said I gotta give more than I'm giving, cause truth will never be heard in religion. After searching the world, on the inside what was hidden, it was the truth.
Neck, I still got marks from the nooses. The truth it produces fear to God. Niggas on the run like Carter Lewis. The truth is my crew is the smoothest bitters of saliva juices like the roots is. We more organic than acoustics. Heavenly what will set you free and kill you in the same breath. That shit you gotta get off your chest before your death. Unless the way you speak is lighter than the pamphlet. Cause the truth gives the words the weight of a planet, God damn it. I ran with what God planted in my heart and I understand it to be to bring some light to the dark. Breathe some life in this art. This must be the truth cause we keep marching on. The truth lay the foundation of what we rockin' on. You can't see it if you're blind, but we will always prevail. Life is like the open sea, the truth is the wind in our sails. In the end, our names is on the lips of dying men. If ever crushed to the earth, we always rise again. When the words of lying men sound lush like the sound of a violin, the truth is there, it's just the heart you gotta find it in.
You're listening to WFT 90.1 FM Community Radio.
Champaign-Urbana Citizens for Peace and Justice held a press conference on Monday, October 12th at the Independent Media Center with Kiwan's family and with community activists.
The following is a recording of the press conference with statements by Kenosha Williams, legal guardian and older sister of Kiwan, Christine Williams, grandmother, his aunt Rhonda, Deborah Thomas, owner of the house where the incident occurred, Dr. Evelyn Underwood, president of the Ministerial Alliance, and Laura Manning, mother of the boy currently being held at the Juvenile Detention Center.
Thank you again. I'm Kenosha Williams. And my first question that I have to ask is why Kiwan being a minor and I'm his guardian. Why was I not contacted, notified, or anything of the situation till way after it happened? My second question I would like to get an answer to is I want to know at what point was the gun pulled out of the holster and why was this gun pulled on two 15-year-old little boys? My third question is I want to know what we are going to do as a community to make sure this does not happen to anybody else's family.
Mr. Terry Townsend is also here, and he's going to make a statement.
It is the behavior of the police that is the issue. And we want answers now. I'm asking that this community come together, and the first thing we do is contact the Justice Department. These are the kind of things that no family should have to endure. That your loved one has been murdered, and you don't have answers why.
Ms. Williams, is there anything else you want to share?
Christina Williams. And this has hit the family very hard. But I want to know what kind of training does the officers have to handle situations like this? What kind of training do they have? I know they have to have training to get on the police force, but how are they trained to deal with minors? It's just hard to understand that you go on something that someone's called you for, and this is what it comes down to. And I mean, they got to be trained to deal with youth as well as grown people. And I mean, if you all of y'all have children yourselves, and I'm sure if somebody calls somebody, the police on one of your kids, you would want to know that they are trained to take care of this problem itself without a gun being drawn. We don't know how the gun come out the holster. We have yet for someone to tell us that. And why would a gun come out the holster on kids? It's a senseless tragedy that we all need to work on.
My name is Deborah Thomas. Kiwan lived with me the whole summer. He was my son's best friend. He ate over there every day. He slept there just about every night. I was friends with his mom, and he was like a son to me. And I don't think he would have tried to break in my home. I just want to know why they tore my house up like that.
I'm Reverend Dr. Evelyn Underwood. Yes, I am president of the Ministerial Alliance of Champaign-Urbana and Vicinity. I'm a mother, a grandmother, and a great-grandmother. And I just cannot understand the things that have gone on and why this family was not able to see, and they weren't able to go in and identify. The child was identified by a picture from the school. We better look inward what's going on in Champaign and what's been happening with the police pulling guns on our children. Something is going to happen here unless we do something about it.
We have a young man who is still being held captive at the juvenile detention center and being allegedly charged with or allegedly breaking and entering into a home that Ms. Thomas or Deborah just said he was not breaking into. From her understanding, he was always welcome there, and it was her home. But we also have here the mother of the young man who's being held at the juvenile detention center. So we want to make sure that those of us who are here, the children that are still alive and well, that we must protect them. And so we want to make sure, we want to allow this mother to also speak.
Hi, my name is Laura Manning, and I was just trying to figure out why they still holding my son. Why do we have to sit there? He suffered enough to see his best friend get shot and killed by the police. And I just want my son to come home. He's suffering too much from this. And they're holding him for no reason.
Any of you young people want to say anything?
Man, like I say, man, the police be on other stuff every day. Every day the police on something new. Every day out there by BMK or the end, they always trying to mess with us. Man, like I say, man, this has been a long time coming for these people to get what's coming to them, man. Every day we sit outside, whether we in our white tees, our polos, our Air Force Ones, our J, we sit outside, whether we walk just because the way our pants is, where our hats turn, they think we bang. You go outside and be swagged up, and you ain't got to be no gangbang or none of that. And see what it is, a lot of these young kids out here, man, they trying to feed into the crowd like I be trying to tell my little dude. You ain't got to feed into the crowd to be cool, my nigga. And, man, they really need what's coming to them because all these police, they slick at the mouth with them badges. They real slick with them badges. And see, y'all see this on camera. Y'all don't see what we see on the streets on my mama. Y'all don't see how they come harass us every day. They harass us every day on the block. I got to the point I get harassed by my first name. All they say that, I come outside, they follow me to the gas station. You dig what I'm saying? That's not cool for nobody to live their life. They follow us. They harass us. Every day I come outside and I see it. Every boy behind me has been harassed by Champagne's finding. And if I'm lying, God can strike me down right now.
My name is Sean Williams. I own a barbershop on the north end of town called the Whip Hair Designs. Keywan was one of my customers. Like a lot of other these guys that's up here at the shop, they come get haircuts. A lot of our young men have problems. And a lot of the problems that these young men have not been addressed. You know, we took upon ourselves as a barbershop to take on the responsibility of taking care of some of these young men. We started a program called BLT last year. We started with 8 people, and we ended up with 60 young men within a 2-3 week period. Because on these own young men's decision, they know that they need help. As a community, we have not supported these young men. And so a lot of things that you see is because of a community's neglect. Me and Councilman Kyle just talked about the harassment of the police department and the racial profiling. And then while we're talking, this incident happens. And he had to leave out of the barber chair to go see about this young man. You know, I just hope that we can come up with some positive ways to handle the problems that these young men and these young women have within school, within the streets, within their homes, within their lives, so we can have a productive community. Thank you very much.
You're listening to WFT 90.1 FM Community Radio.
Martel Miller, longtime community activist on the ground, on the street. And Martel, you've grown up in this town. You raised, born and raised in Champaign. And you've, as a youth and as a grown man, dealt with the police around here. What have you seen?
I've been here for 48 years. We didn't had, like, in my lifetime, we didn't had, like, Champaign police and about 4 African-American males being killed. I started with Cushing Berry. I think it was Williams, then it was Hope, and now it's Keywan. And we had one that was covered up, and they was acquitted by a jury. And the other one, was, I guess, was used ruled an accident. I think that was Hope. And Cushenberry, they said he died of cirrhosis of the liver. And a doctor came from Danville and said that that wasn't true, but the case was never reopened. The 80s, the police were pretty bad. I seen the work of the police in the 80s. And, you know, that's our command force now. They would racially call you names. They would jump on you. I seen some things with my own eyes was done by the police. In the 90s, I don't think it got really better. I seen the handcuffed individual, throw him to the ground and kick him around. I seen a lot, you know. I can sit here and tell you about from the days I was 14 years old. From people right now hold positions, and Champaign got a real story.
Martel, you've been going to city council for several years now addressing what local authorities are calling a zero-tolerance policy. Tell us more about this zero-tolerance policy, Martel.
It's a zero-tolerance policy they have put on our community. We're not never telling them. I heard it from other individuals, and they never warned the northeast side of Champaign yet.
So what's this mean on the streets, this zero tolerance? How's this affect the youth? How's this implemented on the streets?
It's real heavy policing. They stop people and take their information down, stop their freedom of movement. You don't have to be committing a crime, saying that they was told by the command force to stop people, take their name down and run them and put them in a database.
Right, and so there's this zero tolerance for movement of the youth, extreme police reaction when they see the youth. And you've been following these cases. I know you get calls every weekend about stuff going on the streets. And you would almost seem to predict what was going to happen on October 9th in the Kiwan case. Tell me about that.
A few months before then, I have caught the police twice with their guns out on the youth. An officer had his pistol out talking to some youths, and I spoke to him about that. Asked, was he on a weapons call or a felony stop? And he said no, and I was... And a few weeks after that, it was like a fight up on either Belafonte or Roper. And I seen the police cars going that direction, and I followed them. And when I got up there, the officers was out with their weapons out, and it wasn't nothing but a bunch of kids. And I asked them to holster their weapons. And they looked at me, but they holstered their weapons. But it was kids around, like five. It was little kids. And the oldest kid out there was probably about 13. And I made a call to the police station about that.
And so this is, from what you've seen, somewhat routine practice.
Right.
And so what'd you conclude when you saw this going on?
I knew it was accident bound to happen. And I was in a dissent decree meeting one time, and I was in there with Reverend Jerome Chambers, which... President of the NAACP, and he was going to another shooting, I guess in Rockford, that an unarmed man had got shot. And I told him that this is going to happen in Champaign from what I see when the officers having their weapon drawn on our youth. 8 days after that, it happened to Kiwan.
At the city council meeting the week after Kiwan was shot, there was a large showing. And what we're seeing are people coming out with these stories now, these stories that you brought to us for some time, but people bringing these stories of routine police harassment on the streets.
It's been going on, but they're not getting reported because of the complaint procedure that we have with the Champaign Police Department. And I asked for over 2 years to put it in a non-intimidating, threatening place so they can get the complaints in the Champaign Police Department.
And so, but I think what's important here is that the community's feeling emboldened to come out and tell these stories.
Right, but they're getting the stories, but they're not getting the complaints, and they need the complaints to do what they need to do with some of the officers.
Uh-huh. So what's going to transform those complaints into real change?
I think when they get the complaints, and I think they need to deal with, since now we got a youth shot and dead, they need to really deal with the zero tolerance they're putting on the community and this high, heavy policing that they're doing.
And so this investigation conducted by the Illinois State Police has been completed. It's been in the hands of the state's attorney. It's about to come out any day now. What do you think is going to happen when it's released, Martel?
What I think is going to happen, it's not what I feel should happen. I think they're probably going to call it a justified or maybe accidental shooting. But I think it should, since the boy was unarmed, he was so young, and these officers was adults, that they didn't need to be looked at either involuntary manslaughter, second-degree murder, maybe murder, just to look at the incident. And there's no way it should be no punishment. You know, sometimes it's an act you could be sorry for, but the damage has been done, and somebody has to look at that, and this child is gone at 15. Sorry ain't going to fix it, and money, all the money in the world ain't going to bring him back.
Is this still being talked about in homes and on the streets?
It's talked about every day. The older people, I said the 50 and 60, are you in that age group, you would grow up through these things, but the younger people don't really understand, and I don't know what their reaction is going to be. They all, and when you talk to them, they don't know if we're listening to them because they've been saying they had problems with the police from the time we did our documentary. That was the thing they came out with, is somebody help us with the police. And that's been over 5 years ago.
Your documentary, the Citizens Watch video,
right,
back in 2004. And the situation changed much since 2004 when you shot that footage?
I think it got a little worse. When we was having it, the same chief, R.T. Finney, said here, he's going to work on making the community relation better, and I think he failed. He failed unimaginable. I never thought it would be where a teenager would have killed unarmed.
With the chief on the scene.
And with the chief on the scene, part of the incident.
The reaction in the local media has been that, and the newspaper said this, that the youth were responsible for resisting arrest, but who should be responsible in this case?
I'm looking at... I read on the November 13th paper when the News Gazette put that The other 15-year-old was responsible for his friend getting killed by resisting arrest. I'm looking at that all wrong. If they can print that, you know, they need to look at some of their reporters, because they were grown men. Once they seen it, and these boys look like youths. I mean, no hair on their face, 110 pounds soaking wet with a brick in their pocket. You know, there was no way they should have had their guns out. And from what I know, there were 7 officers on the scene within 10 seconds after the shooting. So they had enough manpower there to apprehend these young men with no problem. I went to the funeral, and when I looked in that casket, just right now, just thinking about it, it just affected me, because I got a 16-year-old son. And my 16-year-old son said to me, "Daddy, do you think they will shoot me?" And people just don't understand how that affects a person when your child say that to you, and you can't tell them, "No, son, because it didn't happen." I just think it should have been another way. It had to be another way. It should be a child not dead. It shouldn't happen again, but I can't say it ain't going to happen again until we make the right changes.
Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those that trespass against us. I'll throw them again, we will never, never, never trust. Them not know what they do. They go to yai while I'm sticking like glue. Blink skin green while they're plotting for you.
Took me a
to WFT 90.1 FM Community Radio.
Forgive them, forgive them. Go on like them, love you while them rip you to shreds. Tramp up on your walls and left you for dead. Them are your friend who you depend on from way back when. But if you give them your back, then you must meet your end. Them don't know what them do. Them don't know what them do. Them don't know what them do. Them don't know what them do.
We are on the radio with Sister Carol Ammons and Brother Aaron, who are here from CU Citizens for Peace and Justice. Thanks for coming on the radio today.
Thanks for inviting us.
Pleasure to be here on Liberacion.
So we've been working on community issues for the last 5 years, and it's my feeling that many past incidents have prepared for what's before us today, which is the case of Kiwan Carrington shot by the Champaign police. How have we been building up to what we've seen most recently?
Well, from a community standpoint, as activists, organizers, I believe that just a lot of the organizing itself, building relationships and being a presence in the community has prepared the community to embrace us and to say that here we're willing to work with or even take some sort of direction and guidance from CU Citizens for Peace and Justice, because they've been on the ground working on issues, working on police issues for several years now. And they and we've taken a stance. We've taken a position that is we're trying to build the community, but we're not going to accept any sort of token gestures or any sort of sugarcoat responses from the police department in these serious situations like this. We want real policy changes and a real spirit of change within the department. And we also want growth and development in the community.
I think that steps that took place kind of laid the framework for the work of CU Citizens. When we began to do the works, and again, we focus primarily on criminal justice issues in Champaign County, there was no organization doing that type of on-the-ground grassroots work. And so as I think about the former Urban League, which was critical to social service interests for the Black community, they had a small segment of their work focused on ex-offenders. And once that agency closed, then there was a serious gap. And then as I continue to go through my memory of the impact of the NAACP and its lack of direction on civil rights and social justice issues, the gap grew even more. And so as we began to challenge those in authority to look at the rest of the community's issues and to not ignore them because they're not the popular stands, people began to see the work of CU as critical to filling in those gaps. And I think that that is what's happened over the last several years. And CU Citizens, we're not just flying off the cuff. We do our homework. We present the facts that are not presented in the standard acceptable press. And so I think that that also plays a role in how people begin to view the work of CU. Whereas they made a great effort to try to marginalize our work, because those other organizations I named are not working in this area, it by virtue of the fact that there's no one else, we become the forefront organization to really attack these issues, and I think that that's made the difference.
But in a really grassroots way, I think that's different from any other previous organization, strictly legalistic or just
a
nonprofit.
And we don't get money from anybody, and I think that that's what makes us free to challenge whatever area of peace and justice we choose to. And I think that does make the critical decision as to what we're going to pick up and what we're not.
Well, I think the point also, when you talk about that from a grassroots level, I think the biggest thing that we've done is inspired other citizens to get involved. I don't know, it's just countless people who say they were a part of a unity march, or they came to this particular event, or they had an issue themselves, and they came to us and they said, hey, well, we want to join on and become a member, you know. And so they've helped in so many different facets. We're able to use the gift and skill and talent of whoever comes along. And I think that's been one of the biggest pluses, and one of the most inspirational things about CU Citizens for me is that it's prepared other people, not just those who are always involved, but other people to say, hey, listen, I can make a difference too. I can have some impact. And I think that's been, that has gone a long way in preparing us and the community for where we are today.
And most recently, in the shooting of Kiwan Carrington, we've been seeing more and more people come out to want to lend a hand and help out in some way. Why do you think this case has touched so many people's hearts?
I think that because we have such a large number of people who feel that they are not heard, when you have an innocent child's life taken in the face of a community who has felt under siege for so long, I think it becomes the catalyst for people to really get involved and get engaged in their own community. And I've seen this and people just walking on the street. Everyone knows about this incident. And so this is one of those things that become the poster child, if you will, for social justice movement and change in the local community. And I think that that is what really impacts people. People feel in their own personal circumstances the pain of the family. And as a mother of a 15-year-old son who has done some of the same silliness, you know, lost his keys and trying to go in this door, that door, you know, trying to get in the house, I can understand how, you know, you send your child out in the morning and they don't make it back in the evening. That really strikes people and it causes pain. And so that, I believe, the greatest motivator is that of pain. It makes people get up and do something. And this is one of those circumstances.
I believe the innocence of a young child being gunned down is hard for anyone to ignore. And it really sent shockwaves through the community because whether you're chasing material items or the rat race, you're just caught up in the rat race, it didn't just say that the police department needs some reform and needs change, lots of it. It also says that the community has to create more outlets for these young people. You know, Kiwan's situation was he had issues before this. And I don't know, certainly all these folks in the community now who are coming out and speaking and taking part in different actions were not aware of the issues that he had prior to that. So when we talk about alternative schools, lack of jobs, closing of centers where young people have to go and do things, the rat race where parents are caught up chasing money to pay bills, the void is the young children. And so they sort of get left to fend for themselves, you know. And then when they can't articulate this pain, they rebel in various different forms and fashions. And then we send them to an alternative school that doesn't produce anything better than the public school. And so they feel thrown away. I think this case makes us say we got to stop throwing away our children and ignoring our children. And it forces everybody to say, what sort of contribution did I make to that? It's bigger than this officer pulling the trigger. Yes, we want this reform and we want things. We want accountability from the police department because that's unacceptable. But it's also unacceptable for us to ignore our children.
I think that we really, in my opinion, don't necessarily need reform. But we need a transformation because we're talking about a culture that is produced on both sides of the fence. A police department who sees young African-American youth as threatening. That needs to be transformed. You cannot reform that. That's an ideology and that's a thought process. What you have to do is transform that into a humanistic view. And that's what we don't have in many police departments across the country, as this show will prove that. Is that people look for the reforms. The reform says, well, we'll put in more diversity training. But it doesn't change the hearts and minds of the individuals who are on the street corners with the gun and the tasers and the sticks and the mace. That is not a transformative move. And so in many cases, it become a mute effort. And so I think that we should really challenge the idea of reformist type of government and ask for transformative behavior. And I think that those are two different things. And the way they attempt to make us shape our language, if I challenge you on your behavior, then I'm anti-police. But in reality, And if anything, we can reverse that and say you're anti-people, you're anti-young folks, you understand? So we can always play that anti-this and that. But we would say that there needs to be a transformation, and that is the reason why CU Citizens is calling for the termination of the chief of police, because this is not the first incident that really raises the eyebrows of the community. And it should, across this community, raise your eyebrows on some of the behavior that we've experienced under his leadership. That is transformation. His termination is part of the transformation action.
Well, I agree that in many circles, the word reform brings about a lot of different sentiments and feelings. So I'll remove that from the table. I do want the message to be clear and strong. You know, I just want it to be clear and strong on both sides of the coin. That's what I'm reaching out to, because to me, power, I give away my power when I expect somebody else to treat me better than I treat myself. Or I give away my power when I expect you to do for me what I can do for myself. So I do think there's a tremendous amount of responsibility and a tremendous amount of accountability that each individual in the community has to own up to and ask, how did I contribute to this and what can I do better? And so the question was leading me to think about what the community's response should be, so to speak, almost about this. But also, you know, in agreement with what Carol was just talking about, I certainly agree. Not only should Chief Finney be on permanent leave, but I do believe that the officer needs to be on permanent leave, Officer Norbert. I believe the culture and the climate will be shook up and needs to be shook completely up in the Champaign Police Department by getting rid of Chief Finney, Officer Murphy, who is one of the lieutenant chiefs, needs to go, as well as Officer Griffith, David Griffith, and Officer Norbert. I think when you do that, then you send a very strong message that this sort of behavior will not be tolerated. Otherwise, the chief, you may fire him and then somebody else come in and maybe do the same or even worse job. But to send a clear message to management, administrators, chiefs, and officers on the field, this will not be tolerated and someone will pay the cost for this. But I think that it needs to be more than that. I think criminal charges need to be brought against those individuals, because over and over again, all throughout the state and all over the country, young men, black men in particular, are gunned down. And the only thing that happens to an officer, if anything, is that they're fired. They are not prosecuted. I think that would be transformative.
And in this case, the individual who does have criminal charges pending against them is the other 15-year-old youth involved.
Exactly.
The irony. Exactly. The irony. And that's why I believe that the people in Champaign, and specifically Champaign County, because all of us are so intermingled together when we cross in one street to another city, to a whole other city, we can find ourselves in situations that are not beneficial. And so, you know, I'm thinking in terms of cultural change. What happens in the police department when that cultural change? What happens in the community when that culture change, meaning that parents are now taking a stronger stance with the youth in their homes? Again, this is not a one-sided street, because even if you have a complete change in your police department and your children are still in the streets challenging authority on areas that they really should allow parents to do, then you are still not addressing the complete problem. And so I think that both sides of the fence really needs to be addressed. But because we are dealing with a government entity, the responsibility lies in the hands of those elected officials who can make this decision. And that is where I believe the real cultural emphasis is going to be placed. Who's really in control here? And what is your sentiment when it comes to the black community? I think that is going to be revealed as we continue to move forward. Because, again, we're waiting for a report that's been completed for how many weeks now?
2 weeks now.
Okay. You're sending messages all the time. You're always sending messages. So the fact that the community is still with no more answers than they had a whole month and a half ago is
almost
really
2 months.
Almost
now.
2 months. You mean you can kill a young black man who was unarmed and committing no crime And you can kill him, and his story lingers on forever and ever. Nobody knows exactly what happened to these young men. I couldn't imagine. As a parent, I don't think I would ever go to work. I would spend all my time in front of the courthouse. Where's the report? What happened to my son? See, I believe that the community is cynical, and they don't understand that at some point we have to draw the line in the sand. Parents of all races and ethnicities and economic status need to see this as something traumatically wrong with this city.
And so where are we going next? What CU Citizens for Peace and Justice have planned in the coming week?
Well, I think that some of our members certainly will be back on the grind, because we'll be going back saying, no, we didn't only want some change in use of force policy, but we want an overhaul of a transformative overhaul of the police department itself. And we're going to continue to seek that. We also are expecting this report to drop. And we are in the midst of trying to find out what the parameters are on that. How long can the state's attorney hold this report legally? Can she hold it indefinitely? Possibly. Who knows? But at least we'll do our homework and find out what the parameters are. We're always working behind the scenes, trying to make sure that we have the facts that we're giving to the community so that they don't have to depend on the mainstream media to try to get information. And as things develop, we're planning to host the youth in the Independent Media Center the day that the investigative report is released. And let me go to this, because we received a call that expressed in some way that CU Citizens for Peace and Justice is attempting to incite young people into riotous behavior when the investigative report is released.
I ain't killed nobody.
It's interesting how the focus shifts to the persons who's calling for justice. We've committed no harm, right? For those who are listening, we want you to know that we are encouraging young people to get involved and engaged into civil obedience. We want them to learn their rights. We want them to fight for the rights of justice in the courts. And we're going to train and educate them. We're not teaching mobs, right? We're not doing any action that would be considered disruptive behavior, but we are doing disruptive action, meaning we are going to disrupt the status quo when it comes to justice for young African Americans in Champaign counties. That is our goal, but we are not tearing up buildings, and so you don't have to tape off anything. That's not the point. On that day, we do intend to have teach-ins for the young people, have an open mic for them to express themselves, ask their own questions, and help to guide them in a manner that is making them citizens, right? And so that's where we're going from this point.
The other event that's planned is actually this Thursday, December 3rd, at the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club. It's going to be an organization out of Chicago called Hip Hop Detox, where they use hip hop to reach young people and to help them develop socially and emotionally and deal with the poisons, they call it, of society, thus the term detox. Also, in conjunction with that, there are some community dialogues that are going on. So this community dialogue / hip hop detox will take place this Thursday at the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. And one of the guests will be Mr. Freeway Ricky Ross, who has a tremendous story to tell about the mid-'80s and his involvement in L.A. and the whole crack and drug epidemic and the government's role involved in that. So we really encourage people to take some time out this Thursday from 6:30 to 8:30. Come to the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club Thursday, December 3rd, to come and take part of this hip-hop detox / community dialogue.
Youth and adults are allowed.
Please, we prefer that the parents come with the child and come and hear this strong anti-drug message, anti-prison message that will come from Ricky Ross, but also come and see how this medium of hip hop is used by Brother Enoch Muhammad and how they use this venue to really engage our young people and also take them someplace to another level.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here and on the radio, Carol and Aaron. It's a pleasure being here and working with you and continuing to move forward.
Oh, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to be down here at WEFT and with Sister Carol, Brother Brian Dallina, Sister Antonia, and Liberacion.
The story of Kiwan's death at the Independent Media Center's website, ucimc.org, was receiving 1,000 hits per day after the incident. Some of those who knew him left messages. One of them wrote, "God bless you, Kiwan, and your mother. May both of you rest in peace together." This closing piece, "Alabama" by John Coltrane, recorded following the deaths of four little girls after a bombing of a Birmingham church, echoes the grief and pain that continues to be felt by oppressed communities worldwide. The song is also redeeming in that it calls for transforming our suffering into a global human rights movement where we can struggle together to recover our dignity, respect, and self-determination. Thank you.
This program has been produced by the Liberacion Radio Collective, a community grassroots effort that seeks to embrace a vision of freedom, solidarity, and social change. We hope you'll join us in the struggle.